another 666 ABC Canberra podcast. To subscribe to any of our podcasts, go to abc.net.au/Canberra.
Rare Collections.
Hi, this is Geordie Kilby. Welcome to another issue of Rare Collections. Without David this week, he's taken off to the States for a couple of weeks, more than a couple of weeks actually, for a month or two, probably or almost certainly, to do a little bit of record shopping, amongst other things. Today, a special treat for you, an interview with Sven Liebeck, a man who's been involved in countless interesting musical projects in Australia since the early 1960s. David and I caught up with him a couple of months back, and we're going to bring you part one this fortnight of Sven Liebeck. There'll be a part two as well. This time around, we're going to deal with his production work, and in part two, we'll talk about some of the singles that he produced. But for the purposes of this episode, we're going to be focusing in on some of his albums. So, with no further ado, here's the chat with Sven Liebeck. And it's interesting, we spoke about quite a few records during the course of this interview, but it turns out that the first album I ever bought of Sven's, titled The Music of Sven Liebeck, was also the first that he ever recorded.
That album was my first album. And it was produced by Pat Alton. And Pat Alton, I don't know if you know much about him,
yes,
but he was a very big-time producer at the time and a writer of jingles. And I did a lot of work for Pat as an arranger for his jingle writing.
Right. And he did the theme for This Day Tonight, I think, too, didn't he? The Pat Alton Mob.
Yeah.
One of those, yeah, TV show.
Yeah, and he also produced My Australian Suite.
Yep.
So I had the connections to the festival for quite a while.
You really embraced Australia, didn't you, when you arrived here? I'm just looking through the rest of the songs on that album. You've got songs about the Gold Coast and Lake Mundara, and of course the Australian Suite that you mentioned there.
Well, there's a reason for that, quite apart from the fact that I fell in love with the place. Otherwise, I still wouldn't be here. But I did a lot of composing for documentary films back then. And, of course, all these films were from different parts of Australia. There were golf films, skiing films, film about Mount Isa, mines. And, you know, so I got introduced to Australia, including the outback, very early.
Did you actually go out there? Sorry, Sven. I just wondered, did you actually go out there?
Yeah. The film that we made for Mount Isa was one of the industrial films. You know, it was actually a film by Cinesound, but it was produced by Mount Isa Mines. And they sent both the writer and the composer up to Mount Isa to get the flavor of the place.
Right.
And, you know, thinking back now, from particularly with all the mining disasters that we've had lately, we went down to the 28th level, you know, down into the ground, and there was big smelters and big trucks and tractors and God knows what down there, which obviously they couldn't have brought down, so they must have built them down there. Yes. And it was absolutely fascinating, the smelting, you know, with the fires and everything. It was just unbelievable. And the other thing that was fascinating, too, was that the writer, Ted Roberts, we did a lot of stuff together. We borrowed one of the company cars one day on a Sunday and just drove out from Mount Isa. And for 6 hours out and 6 hours back, we didn't see anything. No life. We even got out of the car and turned over corrugated iron to see if we can find a snake. There was absolutely no life anywhere. It was quite scary and very strange for a European, you know, because we're so damn crowded up there, you know.
And inspirational, Sven?
Oh, very much so, you know. So the ISA became one of the movements of My Australia Suite, you know.
Yeah, I think you're saying that in the liner notes on the Australian Suite album that the beautiful sight of boiling copper in a schooner at the pub with 110 degrees outside sums up Mount Isa for you and many others, I suspect.
Oh, yeah, I would say so. But it's got a very big impact on Europeans, I think, this country. Still does, I think. Mm. But certainly did on me. I remember as a child seeing Town Like Alice, you know, with Peter Finch and what's her name?
Virginia McKenna.
Yeah, and it just got to me, you know, the whole thing, you know, it was just so different and so inviting in a way.
Thank you.
Were you looking for a sound, or did it just happen?
No, I think it just happened. I guess the tunes and you know, I wrote a lot in minor keys and things. That was very much inspired by the country, and what we sort of ended up doing with it in the studio. That just happened. But you know, one thing led to another. While I was still at CBS, Vince Cervente, you know, Nature Walkabout, called me because his editor had heard some of my stuff from a documentary and recommended me for this series. And of course, Vince packed his family in a caravan and toured Australia and filmed it all. And it was a great series. And just getting that break as a composer early in the piece, and it was quite interesting because it was actually the reason that I left CBS, because Bill Smith, the boss, he was running a fairly tight ship, you know. And he called me in and he said, I don't know if I want you to do work outside of the company. You know, like, you have a big future here, and you have to decide if you want to work for me or if you want to work for yourself.
Right.
So it was more or less sort of an ultimatum. And my wife's father, who was also working for himself, he had a big textile industry in New York, told me, actually at the wedding, he came up with this statement. He said, oh, you know, you'll never get anywhere if you work for somebody else. You know, he was very much the, you know, freelancer.
Yep.
And that stuck in my mind, you know. So I decided to go on my own. And that was a fairly scary decision, but it sort of worked out.
I think you could say that, yes.
It's been,
Nature Walkabout was important because it was the first thing I did for television, and people heard it, and other producers started calling, you know, and then I got involved with John McCallum and Boney and Nickel Queen and other things that he produced. And so one thing usually in this industry leads to another.
And it must have been around this same time that you started working on the soundtrack to the surf film, to Ride a White Horse?
Well, Ride a White Horse is, of course, a surf film. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I've never seen the film.
But it's a full-length surf movie, which they started making back then. And I got it through connections again. Ted Roberts was a writer I worked with. He was a friend of a friend who produced the movie, and so on and so forth, you know. So that's usually the way it comes. And it's probably the only surf film that is scored with an ordinary score and not rock and roll. So that made it stand out quite well. And in fact, I won the Best Instrumental Award from 2UE in Sydney back then for the theme to the film. So that was one and only award I've ever touched. I think it fell apart after a few months. But it was a very interesting project. Surfing was very big at the time. And that actually leads me to the Saints, who played at the Coochie Bay Hotel. And we were talking about doing an album because I'd heard them quite a bit at the hotel, going in for a drink. And I thought this band was great, you know. And they were sort of a semi-jazz group. And I came up with the idea, you know, everybody's doing surfing records, why don't we do a skiing record? Because skiing was just becoming popular in Australia too back then. So that's how Ski with the Saints came along, you know. That album is still hanging around. I saw one selling on eBay for $200 the other day. So,
really?
You know, these old albums, because they only printed and sold maybe 500,000 or whatever. So they become quite rare now. And there's a lot of collectors of the old vinyls.
Also, an appreciation of your music too, Sven. That must give you a lift now, mustn't it?
Well, I find that interesting because I think I told you that I was contacted by these two young guys in Melbourne who runs Votari Records. I was down there doing a course for the Australian Film and Television School, and they contacted me and said they loved my stuff. I mean, these guys, I guess they're in their 20s, and I couldn't believe that, you know, this whole new group of young people and all the people they sell to are all in that age group, which I find quite amazing. So they sort of discovered this old stuff, as I call it, and obviously liked it, which is very satisfying.
Written about and influenced other people too.
Yes, apparently. When they started putting, I mean, they sell basically on the internet, and when they put out, I think the first thing they did was In a Space, which was the underwater series with Ron and Valerie Taylor.
Yes.
I all of a sudden started getting emails from all over the world, from fans, you know. It's just amazing.
Because that cropped up in, part of that cropped up in that film, didn't it, the Suzu film.
Yeah, The Life Aquatic with Suzu, that's was another thing that came out of the past, you know. Wes Anderson, big-time American director, all of a sudden is on the phone, wants to use some of my music. So you just never know.
Well, I've got to say, I'm old. Sven and Geordie is young. And Geordie has almost all your albums. And I've collected over the years all your 45s, so there we are.
Well, that's very satisfying.
Another area that I know is of particular interest to a lot of your younger fans these days are your library recordings, particularly the album Solar Flares, but there are a number. Can you tell me a bit more about those?
Well, when I worked at Australian Record Company, they had an association with Southern Music, Pierce Southern. So most of the originals that we produced, including mine, ended up as Southern Music copyrights. So they were, in fact, my publisher for many years. And they approached me to do a couple of library albums. The first one was called My Thing. And it had a track on it, which subsequently is another amazing thing. I mean, the album goes back so far, and all of a sudden this one track called Mystic Canyon that comes out of it is sort of everybody's favorite.
And,
Watari actually re-released a vinyl single of it. So there again, the collectors are out there, you know.
Sven, can you explain library albums to us? What is a library album, and what happens to it?
Well, a library album is something that's put out there, or it certainly was back then, to all film producer advertising agencies, and they can license music from the album, which will cost them a lot less than actually paying for a whole recording session. So they can, you know, say, oh, I'd like to use that track in a Marlboro commercial or whatever, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you would just collect royalties on it. And when I lived in Los Angeles, I just happened to listen to the radio one day, and there was an ad for some religious group, and they had one of my library tracks behind it. And the same thing happened in Las Vegas. You know, you sit there playing blackjack or something, and all of a sudden your music comes over the internet, because they used to use library albums too as background music.
Of course.
Not to mention all the easy listening stuff, you know, which was big deal back in the 70s. And I did some 30 albums of arranging hits, you know, for strings and big orchestras and so on.
Yeah.
And they played on Muzak all over the world, you know, in casinos and in a sudden an airport in Paris, and listened to my own arrangement.
Did you stand up and yell out, that's mine?
Yeah, I felt like it.
With a track like, you know, Mystic Canyon, you mentioned that a lot of people now are rediscovering it. Are you aware of that being used for anything, either back, you know, at the time of its composition, or have you heard that being used in any commercials or anywhere around over the years?
Many years ago, not recently, no.
Okay.
But, of course, those albums are still out there, so who knows?
Is it lucrative, Sven?
Well, I guess it's not enough to live on, you know, but
yep.
You get a few thousand dollars in royalties every year, so it sort of pays for the booze. No, it's almost like a retire. It's almost like a pension.
Yeah.
Because it's always there, and when you freelance, you know, you don't really have any superannuation or anything like that. So it sort of works as an annual income that you don't have to work for. So that's good, you know, because you pick up a couple of extra jobs anyway. And I'm sort of semi-retired now, but which means I don't run around taking producers to lunch. But if they come to me, I'll still do the gig.
What about The Nickel Queen? Because it was such an interesting movie. What about the music for it? Any memories of that?
Yeah, in fact, I have the album right in front of me. I was just looking at it. And, of course, it came out of Dumpus John McCallum. Of course, I'd done Boney, so he wanted me to do the movie. So we already had a connection.
Yep.
And Googie, of course, is great actress. But the fun part, of course, was John Laws, Australia's most famous DJ playing a hippie. And doing it quite well. Have you seen it?
Never seen the movie, because we've got the soundtrack too. Mm. And the back cover's a hoot, isn't it? Especially the shot of John Laws.
Yeah.
But never seen the movie. Is it still available, Flynn, do you know?
Yes. I know it's available because it played at some sort of festival in Melbourne last year.
Did it really?
So it is still around.
For heaven's sake. Yeah.
So, and it was a very funny movie. And, of course, with some actors like Ed Devereaux, you know, Alfred Sandor.
Yep.
And, you know, and, of course, their daughter, Joanna McCallum.
Joanna McCallum, yeah. Ben, when you were talking about hearing your music in Paris and Los Angeles and wherever it was, can you recognise every piece you've written?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I may not be able to remember what I called it.
Right.
But I will pick myself up any place, including arranging.
Go on.
Because, excuse me, it's sort of based on getting back to style. I mean, I have my own way of writing for strings and using flutes and oboes and what have you. And that's one of the things I teach at the film school is that, you know, I can only teach you the way I do things. But the whole idea, of course, is for you to develop your own way of doing things. I remember the first time the trombone player in the New York Philharmonic was a Norwegian. He was a friend of mine. And he had developed a method of playing one tune and singing another one into the trombone, so he actually did a two-part harmony between his own voice and blowing the instrument.
Really?
And I've worked a bit with Maynard Ferguson.
Oh, yes.
Who played a trumpet two octaves above everybody else. So, you know, there's always people who come up with things that are not part of the norm.
Mm.
And there will always be people who come up with things that are not part of the norm.
That's Sven Liebeck. And tune in for part two, in which we'll discuss some of the singles that Sven worked on during his career. Bands like The Atlantics, Sandy Scott, a whole number of great Australian names to be discussed in that one. Before I go, just want to say thanks for those of you who've gotten in touch off the back of the Yarrandoo podcast from a couple of weeks back. We've had some really interesting correspondence, including one from Sophie, who's actually doing a PhD looking at Yarrandoo and looking at recordings that have been reissued and then sampled by various people. And she knows of a few people around the country who also have copies of Yarrandoo and who prize them quite highly, or who rate them very highly. So it's an interesting list of people, including people like DJ Shadow. So thanks very much for getting in touch, Sophie, and good luck with your research. Drop us a line if you've got anything interesting to add to the Sven Liebeck chat, or indeed if you've heard something on one of the other recollections that sparks your interest, or if you know a little bit more about some of the artists that we discuss. Always love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening to this 666 ABC Canberra podcast. To subscribe to this or any of our podcasts, go to abc.net.au/Canberra.